Hey everybody, welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. On this author spotlight, I'm joined by co-host Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are joined by author Janine Frost. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Janine Frost is the New York Times, USA Today, and international best-selling author. Works include the Night Huntress series, the Night Prince series, the Broken Destiny series, the Night Rebel series, and the Beautiful and Beastly series. To date, foreign rights for Janine's novels have sold to 22 different countries. Aside from writing, Janine enjoys reading poetry, watching movies, exploring old cemeteries, spelunking and traveling by car. Airplanes, children, and cookbooks frighten her.
Nice. True. Probably more TMI than I should have put on my bio.
That's okay. That's what we like to hear. Well, we before it. We talk A Curse of Beasts and Magic, let's get to know you a little bit. So what initially drew you to writing?
I mean, probably like a lot of writers, I was an avid reader, and I was reading adult novels well before I should have, you know. In fairness, that was back in the day when they didn't have a great middle grade and YA section. It was kind of like, you know, Judy Blume, the Nancy Drew, and that's that. So, you know, I would just swipe whatever was on my dad's shelf. He read a lot of Robert Ludlum, Tom Clancy, Sidney Sheldon, and my mom read a lot of, you know, romance novels. So between the two, I just read whatever I wanted. And when I grabbed my first romance novel at age 12, yes, I know, young.
Same.
I was hooked. And basically from that moment on, I knew I wanted to write, and I wanted to write that. So just took me a while to actually finish a book.
That's funny because my daughter is 12 currently, and she was asking about, because she is an avid reader as well. And so she was like adding a book to her Kindle, and I was like, oh yeah, you'll probably really enjoy this. And my husband looks at me and he's like, should she be reading that? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. And then as I was thinking, I'm like, I don't know, maybe. But I did that internally so he could not see that reaction. I'm like, it's fine. I was reading stuff at her age I shouldn't have been. I guess I should like police that better, but she's okay.
Yeah, and I also forgot to add like Stephen King, Flowers in the Attic, you know, all that.
Oh, Flowers in the Attic, that is
wildly inappropriate at a young age. But turned out okay.
That's my thing. Like my mom got those Harlequin boxes in the mail, and I would like sit in my room with one. And actually my daughter and I were talking, and I was like, yeah, Grammy used to put like a piece of toilet paper in like as her like bookmark. And I'm like, and I know that she noticed that they moved, but she never said anything about it. And I was like, she did not police what I was reading either, so it works.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I'm not a parent, so I couldn't speak to parenting at all. But, you know, as far as my parents, they knew I could tell the difference between fiction and reality.
Yeah, exactly.
So they did not police my reading material.
So what made you finish and publish that first novel?
Oh, my gosh. I've always had vivid dreams, and I would remember them. And when I was younger, I would try and write little stories out of them. But I also procrastinate. And so I would start stories and never finish them. And eventually, and I knew I wanted to be a writer. And I remember I had was looking, staring down the barrel of my 30th birthday. I laugh now thinking that at the time I was like, oh my God, 30, you know, And anyway, and I thought, wow, I have never even finished one single story from all the, by then probably hundreds that I had started and stopped. If I'm going to be serious about actually writing a book, I need to finish something. And at right about the same time, I had a dream about a half vampire woman arguing with a full vampire man about why she had left him years before. And I knew in the dream she still loved him, but didn't think that it could work. And I also knew that he loved her. He had been looking for her the entire time, and he was absolutely convinced to show her that they could work. And when I woke up, I kept thinking about, like, who are those people? Why did she leave him if she loved him? Half vampire, vampire, what's going on with that? And I thought, I'm going to start to write this. And that actually became Halfway to the Grave, which ended up becoming my debut novel, although the scene that the dream was in did not even take place in Halfway to the Grave. That actually took place in the second book, One Foot in the Grave. I ended up writing a series without even intending it. I was just at the time thinking, I'm going to finish one book. And then I immediately wrote a second, and then a third, and then a fourth in the same series. And my husband said, honey, maybe see if anyone wants to buy the first one before you just, I don't know, keep going.
So you had this whole series ready to roll before you even submitted.
I mean, yes and no. Yes, I thought it was ready to roll. You know, as in I had never seen a revision letter in my life. And I, you know, I thought what I wrote was great. And then you get your first critical feedback, you know, and realize, wow, when you finish a book, you're really just saying take one. And there is a lot of different takes in between what you initially finish and what hits the shelf, as it should be.
Yeah.
You know, first draft of a book is like rolling out of bed. Your hair is greasy, your breath smells, you know, you're wearing your pajamas. I mean, you don't want to go out in public like that necessarily. You know, you want to clean it up. So same principle with the book.
That's so interesting. Analogy. I don't think I knew that Cat and Bones came from a dream. That's so fun.
So is there a piece of advice present author you would give past author you?
You know, it's funny because I would actually tell myself to enjoy it more.
Okay.
You know, when you first start out, I was trying to get an agent, and then I got an agent, and then, oh my God, would somebody please buy my book? And then somebody did. And then it's immediate anxiety of how is it going to do? And then and then everyone tells you, well, the first book, you know, did well, but it's really the second book that determines your career. Then you angst about that. And the list goes on. It's just one set of stress that you put on to another. And if I could actually talk to, you know, Janine back then, I would say, take time to smell the roses a little more, enjoy it. Yes, there's stress because as soon as you're professionally published, it's a career, it's a business, not just your lifelong dream, that creative endeavor that you love. So I wish I would have enjoyed it more instead of just always stressing about the business aspect of that.
I mean, but that's a valid thing to do. Like, you don't, like, you're putting yourself out there, and like, writing and books are an art form, and it's like, you don't know how people are going to receive that. Like, I can understand the stress side of it.
There is, you do stress and there's no avoiding it, but I wish I would have grabbed more moments of joy between the stress.
Yeah. So when you're writing your books, do you have a plan set in place, or are you a pantser?
I'm a pantser.
Oh yeah.
I used to have to contractually give synopsis, and I would send it to my editor and be like, you know, whatever I write is not what this book is going to be. Like, I am lying to you on paper because the contract makes me.
Yeah.
I have no idea what this book is. I usually, when I start a book, I usually know how it starts.
Okay.
One or two scenes in the middle and how it ends. And the rest comes to me as I write, not before I write. And, you know, if you get 10 writers in a room, you're going to get 10 different processes.
Exactly.
So, you know, I would say that that's not the right, air quotes, way to do it. That's just the way that works for me. One time I actually did outline a novel from beginning to end, I think 15 detailed pages, never wrote it. I knew everything that was going to happen. I was done. I will never write that book.
It's just sitting in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah. So part of the fun and the mystery to me is finding out as I'm writing and having the characters and the things surprise me. That keeps me at my keyboard.
I tell almost every author I do these interviews with this, like, that is why this is one of my favorite things to do for the podcast. Because again, you could have 10 authors in a room and every single one of them has a different process. Point A to point B, like, the result is the same, but it is a mass variety. And it's like, there's similarities between people, but that is about the extent of it. Like, no two like ways are the same. And I think that is one of my favorite things about this, just hearing about how different everybody's version is.
I can't stress enough that it is different, because I remember when I was, before I started writing my book, I had met another woman who was a writer, and I said, I want to write a book. And she's like, okay, well, first you have to plot out all your chapters. Then you need to do storyboards of all your characters. Then you need to have, you know, your world building all laid out, you know, on a, as well. And I went home and cried because I'm not organized. And I was like, then I'm never writing a book. And when I started writing that story based on the dream of the vampire and half vampire, I thought, well, you know, I'm probably, screw it. I'm just gonna sit at this keyboard and write whatever spills out of my brain. And I know it's wrong because I'm supposed to be doing all these other things, but that's what worked for me. So I always tell writers, like, listen, if you try one process and it doesn't work, then try another. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, try another. Because as you said, there are so many. Don't ever let anyone tell you you have to do it, you know, in process A, because that might not work for you. Mm.
No, because everybody thinks differently. Everybody reacts differently. Everybody's imagination has a different trailhead, so to speak. Like, in the way, because we have talked to multiple authors where they see the pictures, it plays out as a movie. Some authors, the characters speak to them. Some authors are like, I build the character like from the get-go, and then the story comes from that. Like, some build the world and the characters come from that. It's just, there is not a right way to write a book.
Yes. It's whatever gets you from chapter one to the end. Mm-hmm. That's the right way.
So do you have any rituals or habits that help you stay focused and productive?
Yes. I, every time before I start a book, I compile together a group of songs for a playlist.
Okay.
And while I'm writing the book, and I could add to it potentially while I'm writing, but while I'm writing, I will listen to just those songs. I mean, it's usually fairly extensive, you know, 20 or maybe sometimes more. Okay. Some I'll group together and call like the action sequence, some the romance, but it's those songs. And it's kind of treating myself like, you know, Pavlov's dogs. Okay. Whenever I hear those sounds, I know, okay, I'm not doing social media. I'm not doing admin. I'm not doing all the other parts of being an author. I am writing. Mm-hmm. So I've trained myself to focus in more while listening to specific groups of songs. And then of course, later you'll hear, you know, years later, you'll hear a particular song, or I will, from that grouping. It'll take me right back to thinking about that book I was writing when I hear that song from one of the old playlists.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Well, and it's like, that's like the scent memory, sound memory, all those things. Yeah. Like, oh, I think that's amazing. When you're crafting and pantsing your way through your book, how do you balance the relationships with the story itself?
For me, it all derives from the characters.
Okay.
So it's characters and then forward. How do they interact with each other depends on the type of people the characters are. And the same thing with, you know, the situations that are action, danger, banter, sexy. It's all, who are these characters, for me, determines how they will react to them. So you try and really get into the mindset of the character to then be able to react in a way that's natural to that particular character. And sometimes, especially if you're writing, you know, like the villains, the mindset is dark, but, you know, but not to the villain. Villains are the heroes of their own story, you know? And so you at least, you know, when I'm writing, I try and put aside my reactions, how I would look at a situation and handle it, because I'm not in the book. The characters are. Right. And if I veer wildly off topic from your question, now you know what my editor has to deal with. It's like, stay on plot, Janine. So just reel me back in whenever I tangent.
Oh, no, we love a tangent.
Yeah.
Honestly. So, I mean, the podcast is focused on books, but since January, we have really focused on the weather a lot.
We go off on all kinds of things.
I like joke all the time. People come for the books, they stay for the weather. So what happened is, like, I live outside of Pittsburgh and we got hit with that huge blizzard this year. And so it just kind of spiraled from there. And it's like, we constantly are talking about the weather, or just there. We've had a couple episodes where we barely talk about our topic at all because we all squirrel brain.
Yep.
And it's like, Oh, like somebody will mention something and then it takes us on a 10-minute like journey to the left. And then we'll mention something, it takes us on a 10-minute journey to the right. So we are zigzagging nowhere near what we're supposed to. So yeah.
Feel free to tangent.
There will be no pulling back.
Did that snow turn into concrete? I was in Baltimore at the time, and it the fluffy snow for like 2 days, and then the ice rain turned it into basically concrete for weeks. Oh my
See,
God.
we didn't get the icy rain. Like, we just had snow, and then we had more snow. Like, my dog, who he's an Aussie collie, and he's, I mean, he's not super big. He is a little tubby lately because he's pushing at 90 pounds now. But he could not walk through our backyard because, like, the snow was like almost past his chest, which so he our driveway was quite used because that was where it was flat. But, like, no, we didn't have the concrete snow because, like, we only had the snow, thankfully. So let's talk A Curse of Beasts and Magic. This comes out May 26, 2026. That's a lot of two sixes there. So what was the inspiration for this story?
Harder to answer because it wasn't any one thing. It wasn't like, okay, I had a dream about this character, and that's how it sprung off. It was a bunch of little side things. And
Percolating.
for a while in my brain. One of the ideas was what that kind of led to it was wondering what would happen to someone if you were basically infected by dark magic, versus, we all know the werewolf trope. You get bitten, you become a werewolf and all that. In this case, it wasn't that. She's not my heroine, the is not a werewolf or anything, but she's infected by something that does turn monstrous. And she's nicknamed it the Beast. And it literally takes over into a second huge murderous form. So the idea of what do you do if you are not a monster, but one is inside you. And it's not, at one point she thinks, God, I wish it was a werewolf. Those lucky effers only have to deal with this once a month. I've got this every single day. And how do you deal with that? And how do you keep something that will kill from killing and still try and hold to your own system of values and morals at the same time, knowing that you've got this thing where if you don't give it violence, it will break out and people will die. So that started out with her, and then I didn't realize until later that I had kind of written a reverse Beauty and the Beast where they're like, Beauty is the Beast in this one. But unlike that story where a lot of fairy tales, it's oh, true love will save the girl and save the day. This one is a bit darker because no, true love isn't gonna save her. She needs a man who's even more monstrous than she is. So that's where they came up with it's like Beauty and the Beast meets the Witcher, only she's the Beast and he's something even more dangerous. So it's flipping tropes on their head that I wasn't even really aware that I was writing those tropes until the book was done. Because again, organic pantser writer doesn't plan stuff in advance.
So this is my first book from you, and I one of the things as I was reading it, so I'm not a huge like romanticy fantasy, like I will read them if Amanda tells me I read it or we're doing an interview with an author, I will read them because I always like to read the book before we talk to an author. And so as I'm reading it, I'm like, I love the way that this world is coming together because as Rain is discovering all these things, like we are discovering it right along with her. And it's one of those styles of writing that we don't always get and that works well. And I just was like, this is such a great way to add this fantasy element, but like have her discover this whole new world, but we get to do it with her.
Yeah, it's a split world romantasy. So when it starts out, building on what you're saying, Rain is a modern contemporary heroine. She's a quote unquote normal modern woman, 26-year-old. She works as a nurse. It's our world. She knows she has a beast inside her. She doesn't know How? I mean, she doesn't even really understand how it happened. She survived a terrible attack that killed her family, but again, she wasn't bitten, so she's like, it's not like the werewolf thing. She doesn't know how she got infected with this thing, and she doesn't know what else is out there. She knows there might be other things out there because she's got this thing inside her, but she doesn't know what. So it's written in first person point of view. So as you say, she discovers through an act of kindness, saving an old guy from what she thought was just muggers, and they turn into these huge half snake people, that okay, yes, there are other things in the world, and that is just the tip of the iceberg. Because then when she meets the male main character, not only are there other creatures in her world, there are other worlds, and she ends up going to them that are ruled by creatures and monsters, you know, dragons in one, the fae in another, where it's just so much that she had no idea. And it does kind of open slowly, because you start from where she starts, which is normal person, normal world, except she has something supernatural inside her. And she doesn't realize it, but that is just the beginning of the of the danger and the fantasy. And of course, since I write romance, the hot sex too.
Yeah, I mean, and it starts, you kind of said it starts slow, but I didn't think it started slow at all.
Because, I didn't either.
We jump right into an action scene. We are right into figuring out what's going on with her. She's, you know, it's like when I read your books, like I expect heroines like that, and you always give them to me. It's like she is like fierce, she's determined. You know, she has the healing side of her as well. But like I was immediately in it. I was like, oh, I love this.
Oh, isn't she cute? That's my evil plan. But when she starts slow, she doesn't realize immediately that there are other worlds. She realizes, in chapter one, okay, I'm right, there are other creatures, but then she finds out that there are other worlds. That's, I guess, start slow. Yeah. I hope the book doesn't start slow. That's why I have an editor that helps me with pacing.
No, it definitely doesn't, because you kind of like, once that opening piece of it happens, because I mean, it's a fairly short timeline for book one, because like even at one point, like I was reading and it was like, oh, that was just yesterday, but so much had happened in such a little bit amount of time, and I'm like, oh, that was just yesterday. Like, as the reader, you don't realize it was such a quick turnaround either, which I think was really nice, because there were so many little intricate parts like that where it's like, it reminds you, like, this is a fairly short timeline for book one, like that things are happening, and things are happening quickly, but they aren't quick at the same time.
Yeah, I remember when I was almost done with the book, I'm like, wow, only X amount of days has passed, because like you said, a lot does happen, but it does, you know, the whole life comes at you fast. Really, really, my heroine experiences that in a big way. But you know, sometimes, haven't we all had that happen sometimes, where it's just one thing after another, and you turn around and you're like, how, you know, only last week, like everything was normal, and then boom, all this stuff has happened. Sometimes it, obviously, hopefully not with dragons and everything else like this book, but
yeah, that'd be so cool.
Life
though.
Can come at all of us fast sometimes.
Well, you did have this one thing where they're in the like part of the one of the libraries, and it's like the huge like room, and he talks about the moths eating the dust.
Oh yeah,
they flutter with the flutter from the rings prevent rot, and I'm like, moths are disgusting, like icky things, but I would live with moths if they took the dust out of my house. Like,
they're magical ones. They're magical.
I would like magical moths in my house, because then I don't have the dust anything.
Right? They're not the ones that annoy you and fly around your head. They're the ones that look like a fantasy world. They're, you know, they glow softly and they flitter back and forth, and they do all the housekeeping. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
I know, seriously, it's like a Mary Poppins moth. Like, it does the work for you. Mm-hmm. I was like, I really would like these moths to exist. But unfortunately, I cannot.
Right? I haven't found them either.
But Rain is one of these characters where she's so much stronger than she, like, as the book progresses, you find out she's so much stronger than she realized. Like, she, like, there's so much more to this beast, which I don't want to talk about it too much because I don't want to spoil anything. But, like, the beast itself is, it's not to be trifled with.
No.
No, but she, yeah. She, but and, she's so good at controlling it.
It's you learn more about it and her as the book goes on, and she's I think in a lot of ways we're all our own worst critics. So she is very, very distraught and upset with herself for not controlling it more. And then she meets people that actually know what's inside her, and they are stunned at how she has been able to, you know, remain undetected, live her life, and not be dropping bodies left and right. And sometimes, again, you know, I try and I start with people, as I said, and then I move, you know, move out with the world. But isn't that a lot of people too that we know? You know, you could have a friend that's going through a hard time and they're just like, oh, I should be doing more. I should be, you know, I should be doing this. And you're like, you are doing amazing. You know, that's my character, Rain, in a lot of ways, doesn't realize, and probably by the end still doesn't realize how much of an effort she took, because it's just a fight she's been fighting every day. So she can't see the enormity of what she's done. She only sees the failures, and it takes you know, the hero Remy and the others to point out, you don't realize all the victories you've had. Like, what you've done is actually amazing.
Yeah, because I mean, I thought it was really interesting that most of the people that she meets outside of Remy are all very like wary of her because of what she has inside of her. I mean, they're very scared of her. And Remy immediately has this, you know, it takes a minute, but his quickly turns into respect.
Does it take a minute though?
I mean, just for the respect thing, you know. I don't think the attraction takes a minute, but you know, for him to get past, you know, to understand how much control she's, you know, leveraging against this beast inside of her. It doesn't take long, but yeah, but everybody else is very wary, but he's immediately like, oh, respect. And then of course later that makes sense why, but.
And he rules the monsters. So when he meets her, he's not sure what monster she has, but it's situation normal for him. Okay. Yeah. Find out what you've got. I'm going to rule it. That's his job. You know, he's my male main character is they call them wardens, but in the book, the country and the world is split up by different territories that these wardens rule, and they're the ones that oversee all of the monsters and creatures that the average person doesn't know about. And the average person doesn't know about it because the wardens make sure that the ones living in our world do not step too far out of line. So he is ready to rule her or kill her, depending on what her beast is when he first meets her, because that is what he has been trained for hundreds of years to do. So she is just another potential problem when they first meet. And then of course, you know, things change. And
Well, and I thought the way the structure of the world too, where there's the wardens of different territories and there's like the sub worlds that are included in those in those territories. And like, cause we go to this one place where like, she doesn't know it exists naturally, but he's like, of course it exists. And all these things, like, this is where these things are. And, but it's like some of the creatures and fantastical monsters, like they live in these separate worlds. Cause I mean, the way you described one, it's like the size of a car. And it's like, well, that can't be like a crocodile in the sewer type of thing, or an alligator in the sewer type of thing, which although, I mean, you kind of could, but that would be kind of cool.
I liked having creatures in our world, you know, the idea of what if, you know, what if there was so much more to this world than you realize. I've always loved to play with that factor. But I also wanted to show worlds where the creatures, it's their world. And so, like you said, the things the size of a car, that's normal. You know, the fantastical elements, that's just Tuesday there. That's the world they live and reign in. And she is the outsider in the anomaly in. So it was fun to show both of those things.
And in these worlds too, like her, as we like get to know more of her character, and there's certain things that capabilities that she has, which again being super vague, but you really need to read it about it. But
Yeah.
like some of her capabilities, like they're surprised at the fact that this can happen, which I feel like that means that there is more to her than we
Yeah.
know. But by the end of the book, we don't know if there's more to her that we know yet. Like we still, I still think there is more to her, but that's just a me, like.
Well, you know, it is it's planned to be a trilogy as of now.
Oh.
So the second book is already done. And it, yeah, it's already done and it's gone through most of the revisions.
Okay.
So, you know, so you'll get to dig you get to see some of the more with her,
Okay.
with Remy, with the different worlds. It picks up basically right where the end of the first book left off.
Okay.
I can't
Okay.
say what, of course, or it would spoiler.
Yeah.
But so yeah, so you, as with the series, you do start to widen the lens and dig deeper and show more of the worlds and the characters and what's made these people who they are and what's the next big challenge, you know, as far as good versus evil, you know, destruction versus saving, and also romantically, the next big challenge for Remy and Rain.
Well, and there's so much, they're good but evil at the same time in this one. So it's like, are they really good or are they really bad type of thing?
I love playing with morally gray
Yeah.
characters. It's a good time because are they good? Are they bad? Kind of depends on the circumstances.
Well, are they good for the right reason or are they bad for the right reason?
And that, and again, the answer to that is yes, too.
Yeah.
Because again, it's people who grew up in different worlds and with different roles would have a different, very different moral center and idea of what is right and wrong than we would. So can you trust them? Can you not? Are they a good, quote unquote, good person or a bad person? Kind of depends. And some of them will, some of them are like there will be surprises, let's just say.
I'm
Excited.
excited.
So a trilogy. Now, as a pantser, though, is it hard to keep things straight, or is it like since you already have that past book in your mind, like it's easy to keep like the intricacies and like the surprises that we've had so far? Is it easy to like to keep those bl like flowing the way they're supposed to, or is that a good editor for you?
No, and
Okay.
yes, and no, and yeah, and a good editor is always worth their weight in gold. Like I said, I knew how the second book would begin.
Okay.
I knew how it would end, and I knew one or two scenes in the middle, and wasn't sure about the rest of it. So, you know, the fun
Okay.
part of being a pantser is finding out those things at the keyboard and having things surprise you, and going, oh my God, that's so much cooler than I originally thought I was going to do. And the not fun thing is Sunday sitting at the keyboard going, what the bleep am I going to write? I have no idea. Oh my God, this is a nightmare. There are those days too.
So what's next for you?
Well, right now, the third book.
Okay.
I guess I just turned the second book in, so I'll be th starting the third book imminently. And after that, after that, it's kind of up in the air. I've joked that I don't write by any logical process where you think, okay, well, you know, I'm going to continue with this series because this makes the most sense, you know, whatever. I mean, I write the stories depending on which character is the loudest in my head. Now, when I say that, no one grab a straitjacket. You know, it's just which character I can't stop thinking about, where all of a sudden I feel like I'm learning, you know, mentally learning more of their story. I'm getting more story ideas. That's what I say when I say I pick the one that won't shut up. So we'll see. Right now, I have some ideas for potential spin-offs in the world. I might get to the end of the third book and think, you know what? I am not done writing these characters. That happened with my Night Prince series. I thought that was going to be a duology that turned into a trilogy that turned into four books. My Night Huntress series, Cat and Bones, when I started it, yeah, I thought I was going to write one book. I wrote 7 and 2 Bones point of views and several, you know, short stories in that world. We see how that turned out. So, yeah, I don't know is the short answer to that.
No, I think that's great. Because there's just something about this world and the characters that you've given us that honestly, I could live in this world forever. Like, yeah. I'm very intrigued by some. And I mean, who knows what's going to happen with them. But if they don't have something by the end of this one, I'm like, I really could get a story about them.
Well, and there are new characters that also get introduced in the second book that I can't wait for people to meet and discover as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun because, you know, writing, you spend so much of your time with yourself and people who don't exist. Yeah. So you have to enjoy it because that's a lot of days, you know, where you're not around other people and getting the normal interaction that a lot of people get just on their day-to-day job. So You got to have fun with the worlds and the characters you create.
Amanda, do you have any other questions?
No, I think we covered everything. Everything else I would ask would be a spoiler, so I don't want to do that.
I know. There's so many little pieces of this that it's just really a lot of fun. But the writing is just, it's fun. There's some, like, a snappiness to it. Like, a really, like, there's good dialogue and all those things. And just, it just really pulls you in and, like, keeps you engaged, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a longtime fan of the Night Huntress and the Night Prince series. So I think any of your readers who love those are going to love this book. Mm. I'm losing my voice.
Oh, well,
sorry.
Thank you. I've told people that, Remy, if you read the Night Prince series, I've said he reminds me a little bit of Vlad from my Night Prince series.
Yeah. Mm. He does. There's definitely some Vlad there.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us and answering all our questions.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for letting me ramble.
A ramble is always good and always welcome. And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at @buzzingaboutromance or on Twitter at @buzzingromance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.